Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kawula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, wake up.
Yeah.
Nothing?
Well, I thought you'd be...
No rooster? No whip.
Just whipping you into shape.
Is that a whip or a mousetrap?
It's both. How are you?
Wait,
you were anticipating the sound. That's why
I was like,
don't give it to him yet. I get antsy, and I was like, just hold on to that moment.
You get beat down with it every week. You eventually just accept it.
How was your week?
The laundry room is all the wash machines in my apartment building are...
Are they jammed?
They're done. Someone's trying to.
Like all of them went out at the same time?
Well, there's only two. There's a washing machine, one washing machine, one dryer. There's only like a 10 unit building, so that's all they have.
Okay.
And someone keeps popping the thing open to take the quarters.
What?
It's got to be $30 tops. Like tops, $30.
That's a lot of time that you could be spending doing
$30.
Productive. Yes.
Knock on my door. I will get you. If you knock on my door, go, hey, I'm going to go break the wash machines, or you give me
$30. Well, so what do? They just like they ganked the
thing.
They're
popping
open?
The lock off and then like sliding out the mechanism.
Live in a shady building. Shady.
There's only 10 units. There's no one in the building. I think someone's coming in.
First of all, let's talk to your landlord about 10 people, 10 apartments sharing one.
No, we have. We've had this discussion.
Second of all, that's probably why the guy's like, you know, I'm assuming it's some guy that's...
It's a rent control building, so they don't give a crap about the tenants.
Of course.
And so it's just one wash machine, one dryer. And someone's stealing, I'm assuming, at the most $30.
So where are you putting all those quarters, Eddie?
I'm doing laundry with them at other laundromats.
So you know what sucks about that is now you have to drive to a laundromat.
No, my truck downstairs in the garage right now is filled.
That sucks.
After this show, I'm going to the laundromat.
That's a bummer.
With four huge bags of laundry.
I have been there many a time. And you know what? I would always choose to do laundry on a day or a time that everybody chose to do laundry when I was living in an apartment complex. And you know what? It's like it never failed. I'd have to do my laundry like to know that the machine was like good to go. Like 11:30 at night on a Sunday.
Most buildings have like 5-6 washing machines minimum.
No, mine didn't, but it had six apartments. Six apartments for one washer, one dryer. That's
okay.
That's doable. But 10? Your landlord's cheap.
Yeah. Well, they just don't care.
Well, how was your Valentine's Day, besides the fact that you've been wearing dirty underwear?
I don't really do Valentine's Day.
Every day is Valentine's when you're married to your sweetheart.
You had so much love.
You didn't get her any chocolates or anything?
Roses.
Oh, that's nice.
You get roses.
Dude, that's very...
I don't do the dinner thing.
I'm surprised you even got her roses. Right. Like, you know? Right. Did she get you like a lightsaber or something?
No, she didn't give me anything.
Oh,
Jack shit.
You know what?
Give me two things, Jack and shit.
Did you say anything or were you just like...
No, it's just...
It was expected.
It's Valentine's. I don't want anything. What am I going to... What?
Tracy, you got to step up your game.
I don't want anything. It's a stupid holiday.
Well, come on, though. You know, you could get something like...
What?
She gonna some give me Star chocolate? Wars toy or a movie card? I mean, something small, simple.
I just know. It's the same money. We're married. It's the same. It's just like...
Right.
I can just go to the movies and spend the money instead of...
I'm a total music nerd. I got a guitar cable for Valentine's Day
What's guitar cable?
So a guitar cable is just basically what connects you to either a recording software or going into a house system when you play live.
Right.
But I got this new custom-made guitar, which is amazing, but it has no volume control on the pickup. So you can't control... When the thing goes in, you know. So this Taylor guitar has made this incredible new volume control cable that's never been invented. So I'm super stoked. It's really weird though, because it's like, you know, now I've got control on the cable instead of the guitar, which is...
Should you have it on the guitar?
Well, most
did they mess
most
up when
do.
They made
no,
your
no,
guitar?
They didn't. They didn't mess up. It was just like a choice of putting Velcro in for the volume control or just not. And it, like with all these nice woods, it would have been such a shame to put Velcro in the guitar. So I was like, no, just...
It would have been inside the guitar though, right?
Yeah, but...
You wouldn't have seen it.
No, I didn't want that. I wanted it to be just pure. And I still got the same thing, so, you know, that's what I got. And a gun.
Gunshot.
No, no gun. But
so we almost didn't have a guest tonight.
I know. And you know what? We came in huge.
Big time.
But we have a super guest.
We had two guests because we had my friend volunteered to fill in too. So your guy confirmed first.
Yes,
he did. My guy still wanted to do the show. So
my guy's awesome,
too. We're going to do your guy. And then we're going to do my guy who's in the waiting room.
He's in the waiting room.
He's going to wait until the end of the show. I told him I could. I promised. He drove like an hour and a half in traffic. I promised I would get him
An hour and a half traffic?
Yeah. He lives in like.
And then it took him another hour to get up the elevator because that elevator is the slowest elevator in town.
That's another hour and a half.
Well, my guest is going to make our show magic.
We're going to get your guest. Magic. We're going to get your guest in and out, and then we're going to bring him in and give him his due time.
Well, why don't we just, you know what? Let's just get this thing
on the road. Let's get started so we can get both guys in here. Let's get both guys in here.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Sharma, recording engineer extraordinaire. Give him a hand. Give him a hand. Our studio audience loves you already. Say hello, Chris.
Wow, what a reception.
It's
what
huge. A reception. It's such a huge reception.
I walked
reception.
By someone in the lobby coming in that looked like they'd been crying.
So oh, it could be my buddy.
You're like, oh, man.
It could be my buddy.
I was like, Eddie, what did you do?
He's in traffic for a while.
Jeez.
He's very excited to be here.
Well, I feel honored to be picked.
Well, so. You know what? I've actually been calling you for months. He knows.
Yeah, I've been calling him for months.
Non-responsive. It's okay. It's okay. You're a busy man. So I've been trying to get him on the show. And never did I ever feel that I would be able to get you in a last minute bind. But I was like, I'm just going to see if I can just throw this out there. And yes. You were actually the first person I texted.
Great.
And
yeah,
you
got back and I was like, the universe will provide.
No, but you know, when people are busy, like you are a busy man. First of all, I'm just going to.
Well, he came in with like a suitcase, which obviously means he does stuff all the time.
He's doing constantly. Stuff. He's probably doing stuff on the show.
Like he's ready to travel at a minute's notice.
Exactly. So, you never know. Where
you never know when you're going to get on a plane.
So Chris has been recording some band called the Rolling Stones. He's been working with huge producers. He's been producing big artists himself. Wow. He's been producing and doing things with a tech company that we're going to talk about. He is doing groundbreaking things. He is working with the best of the best of the best. And you know what? It's amazing that we got you. So high five. I'm going to give you just
high five.
Hey, I mean, that's an actual high five. That wasn't a sound effect.
Really, I mean, honestly, it's like I'm honored to have you on the show. And one of my favorite parts about doing this is I get to interview you and learn.
Are you wearing the Rolling Stones t-shirt?
I'm wearing the of course.
Wow.
That's just like not serendipity. It was like.
Way to fluff the guest.
Hey, I'm a fan. I'm a fan.
Have you seen him on this latest tour?
I saw him on the last tour.
Yeah.
I have not seen him on this one. But when are they touring out here? Have they already come through?
They've already come through, and now I think they're in South America right now.
Wow. What a life. Poor guys.
Yeah. But if you see them, I mean, they're in rare form. That was an amazing.
You know, I have to say, one of the coolest things about seeing the Rolling Stones, besides the fact that you're seeing a band that's been around for 50 years, is I've never seen a band that played all their own stuff and every song was a hit.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like they do covers of themselves at this point.
Yeah.
It's like their stuff is so classic. It's like they're doing themselves. It's
hilarious. You're hearing it, you're just like, oh my God, yeah, I forgot about that. Oh my God, I forgot about that song. Damn, that's a good song. Oh my God, yes.
It's like when David Bowie died. I'm like, I forgot.
I forgot too.
Until people start playing, I'm like, that was his. That's right. That was a David Bowie song.
And you know what's cool is you told me a really cool story when we had lunch a long time ago. You said that you were the one that told Mick. You were like, he played drums or something, right? On one of the records that you were recording, you needed. They were talking about doing some part, and you're like, well, you used to play drums or something like that, right?
Well,
or harmonica. It was something that he did.
Yeah, he's a multi-instrumentalist. And when I first started working with them, they hired me to go over and just do some drum beats because I was a hip-hop, you know, drum producer and programmer. And I did some beats, and they were fine, but, you know, they didn't sparkle for them.
Right,
But it ended up being that then Mick just hopped on the drum set and Charlie just wasn't able to be there. And so they were writing and Mick was great. He's done that a lot.
Yeah, but you knew that he played drums. Like you suggested it, which means like you did your homework. You know, most people don't.
You know, with the Rolling Stones, the suggestions are they come and go, but those guys know exactly what's going on and exactly what they're going to do. And they do it and they kill it when they do it.
They're such a badass.
So I would not claim to.
Did you have to play drums in front of them? Is that what
I
happened?
I had to do some programming in front of them.
That had to be like.
It was not.
That had to be uncomfortable.
Like an audition a little bit?
It was my first. That was my first encounter with them, and you kind of. you know, in any creative situation, you have to earn people's trusts. And, you know, I was just...
Because they're like the Mount... They're like on the Mount Rushmore of rock and roll.
They are.
So
they,
it's like
really
the dude
are.
Did like...
Well, getting back to what you were saying about like, you know, Bowie and everything, like, think about the Stones. It's all of these riffs that are... They're in our DNA at this point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
We've been hearing them as we're growing up. So it's unbelievable.
They are the, like, they are social, political, musical.
Yeah.
They're all these parts of culture that we identify with from
exactly.
in the last 50 years. You know
yeah.
what I mean? The coolest thing I've seen in a magazine, I saw a picture of Keith Richards, and it was like a young picture of him. And he joined the Stones, I think, when he was 16, right? And it said, Keith Richards, the only job he's ever had. I was like, oh, my God,
yeah,
that's so
can you
fucking badass. So, yes. Anyways, you have been recording all these crazy artists.
Yeah.
I want to talk about your backstory a little bit, okay?
Okay.
So let's talk about you
I
as,
want to talk
a,
about
as
his
a young...
hair. His hair is amazing.
You, Eddie's got a crush.
I do.
Eddie's half Indian. Did you know that?
No, yeah, really?
Yeah, he's half Indian. So, like, we connect on so many levels,
How
man.
Come you don't
Rich
have hair
Sharma.
Like that?
I will, hopefully.
That hair is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing well.
I got some time.
Yeah, you don't need to
I'm
go
losing
to
my. I'm losing my hair. I just got a haircut, and, like, the hairdresser's, like, trying to cover up spots. I'm like, that. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, Chris, you do have some good hair, man.
It's amazing.
You got some good, like, 80s Michael McDonald, like, rock that shit.
McDonald
it's 80s Ric Flair hair. That's
Ric
awesome.
Flair. Good call, oh, man.
Good hair.
All right, so let's talk about like early days. Like, how did you get into recording? What was the thing that made you want to be a recording artist or a recording engineer or like work with musicians or be a musician?
You know, when I was in college, music was a big part of my life. And even before that, being a little kid, it was a big part of my life. And my dad was, he was an electrical engineer, an inventor, and he kind of made some of the first power amplifiers that had transistors instead of tubes.
That's amazing.
And he designed, there was a company called Acoustic. And,
yep, I know that company.
You know, they made the bass amps,
yep.
you know, the John Paul Jones bass
yep.
amp. That's the one my dad designed that.
That's
so, the
crazy.
Big 360 stack and stuff. So I was exposed to all of it when I was a kid. And then in college, it was a big part of my life. But I was an econ computer science major, and I was going to get, you know.
So you were like scared away by all these, all the soldering.
Yeah, exactly. No, the soldering was the fun part. It was actually knowing what everything does was a little bit more complicated. So, but I didn't really think about music as a career. And then when I graduated and the specter of like, oh, wait, you're going to have a job for the rest of your life.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, this is maybe you should put a little more thought into it than just like going and getting some random job. So I just wrote a letter to every record producer in Mix Magazine and their listing of record producers to be their assistant. And nobody responded. And so then,
damn it,
my God, that would have been the easy way. So then I became like a kind of runner janitor at A&M Studios.
Oh, wow.
Which is now Henson, which was, you know, was on the
That's a legendary,
on the lot.
That's a legendary
It might be
studio.
The most legendary recording studio
I mean, everybody,
ever.
Just
yeah.
tell Eddie some of the bands that have gone through there. I know there's...
Oh, my God. The Police, The Carpenters, The Stones... You know, Aerosmith, We Are the World was
yep,
recorded
that's
there.
Right.
Where's it at?
It's right
on
the
Brea.
It's
right.
Oh, it's the Chaplin
right
Studios.
You.
Yeah,
Chaplin
exactly.
Studios.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, it's called Chaplin now?
That's
well,
no,
was
that was
Chaplin's.
That's Charlie Chaplin's
oh.
studio.
I thought that was on Sunset and
Sunset
and La Brea with the Kermit the Frog on the top.
Yeah.
The,
oh, I thought that was Crossroads.
That was, that was quite a moment.
That was Charlie Chaplin's.
A&M record logo to Kermit the Frog.
I know.
But, you know, they kept the studio.
It's amazing it's still a function. I mean, it should be a... historical museum. It should be a museum,
yeah.
a Hollywood museum.
In fact,
museum.
They do have a museum in there for all the Muppet stuff.
Yeah, but like it's Charlie Chaplin's
right.
studio.
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
I think it's a historical landmark, and that's why it's
Yeah, but like that was there, and it was surrounded by orange groves
Yeah,
when it was built. There was nothing there but orange fields.
Yeah. Okay, so orange walk trees. Me through this. You're doing like janitor stuff in like a
You start out, you're
epic
a janitor, and then you're also, you go get people's food.
Yeah.
You're a runner.
Their coffee yeah. and all that stuff.
Do you wash your hands between the two things?
You know, it was a different environment than it is these
you
days.
Just
I will
give
say
them,
that.
You clean know. Toilets, then get sandwiches?
Yeah, and if you're working the night shift, yeah, exactly. You didn't do a lot of work sober there. You know, if you're a runner, I'll tell you that. But
you must have been rubbing shoulders with
everybody.
The most insane bands.
Yeah.
I mean,
the first day, you know, I went and I got a tuna fish sandwich for Bob Seger.
Oh my God!
And then I got called on the carpet because he'd asked it for a plane and it had lettuce on it. And lettuce is not part of a plain sandwich. Well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, I ordered, I said plain. There
is
you
that
go.
What he said? Did he say lettuce is not part of a plain sandwich?
Oh, yeah. Well, we had a big meeting about it with my boss.
Really?
And, oh, yeah. Wow. We have to make sure that tuna fish sandwiches were going to be.
Yeah, but lettuce you can just take off and
I know. Taste it's like anything. To quote one of my friends, it wasn't super glued on there.
Right.
So that was a good indication into the level of which artists are kind of operating.
Or a-holes?
Well, you can look at it as a-holes.
For the most part.
But what they're doing is that they're putting themselves out there in an emotional way that's very scary. So then everything is super high stress.
And, you know, I never thought about it like that.
And it's important to keep their environment
interesting,
a place where they can express themselves.
Hmm.
You know, so.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way because
yeah.
Bob Seger would have
a
lettuce
tuna
fish sandwich all over his face.
Lettuce spray.
That came with a lot of observing of this phenomenon from the other side. But, yeah.
That's a little bit ridiculous, though, that you had a meeting over it. You're like, we need to have a meeting over this.
It's kind of ridiculous. It really is.
But you must have heard some amazing music through the walls, too.
The music was just coming out of that place. You walked in, and it was just seething with people. In one corner, they're arguing about record groove distortion and then tape, and then, you know, there's rock stars running around. And I just took one look at that, and I said, yeah.
You're like, this is it.
This is it. I'm pretty cool with this environment.
That's electric. That's electric.
It was super electric. And it felt like my new company is called Big Music, and we deal with supporting artists. But the reason it's called that is I remember walking in that studio, and just the music industry felt so big and so alive and so powerful. And you want to make that happen for everybody. But it was a really, really
and did you get ever thrown in on like assisting a session or like? Because I mean, there's always like personnel that are either doing drugs or like they're.
Well,
you were in a good time, man. Yeah. Like there was some fun going
on.
Keep
the cocaine room stopped.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, the razor blades weren't just for cutting tape. I'll tell you that.
These are cocaine razor blades. These are tape razor blades.
Yeah, and don't mix them up.
No, Bob Seger would get really bad.
Yeah, you think the lettuce was bad.
Yeah, don't get cocaine on his tape razor.
Oh, my God. That's insane. Yeah. So was that like your first-hand experience ever being in a studio, recording?
Pretty much. Wow. Pretty much. I'd done live sound before, which was fine, and that's fun. But then as soon as I start recording and you know, as an engineer and a producer, you're very much a part of this record making process because it takes a long time, as you know.
Right.
And you have a huge amount of input to what this final product is. And it's some of it's visceral and some of it's organizational. And it's an amazingly fun process to go through. Well, very stressful, but really cool. So,
but it's fulfilling. That's the cool thing about it. It's like there's a struggle with every part of recording or music on every level, but there's also a fulfilling part when it's like everything kind of comes together. You kind of see how when things align, it's like, oh, yeah, this is the
shit.
Yeah,
when it works. When your plan works.
Yes.
You know.
So I always find, too, it's like sometimes you could be sitting on a guitar riff or a part or maybe it's a vocal, whatever it is. And that day, it's just not your day to hit that whatever it is, that thing.
Yeah.
And then the next day you come in and it's like, boom, you do it once. You know, it just has like some magical thing to it that it didn't have before. So sometimes it's like you just got to allow those kind of moments to take place and not get in the way. That's what I've learned along the way.
Exactly. You have to, and I don't know who I'm quoting, but it's not me, but you have to be a receiver for the creativity to come inside. And a lot of that being a receiver means that you prepare. You're thinking about the arrangements. You're going through the arrangements. You're rehearsing. And even though, you know, wow, this song is missing something, the way to figure that out is not to abandon it, but to just keep with it and keep working, move to something else.
And lettuce fucks all that up.
Come back. And if you have lettuce...
That just fucks
Get out. Right. If you have lettuce, you know what? That's just got to go. Yeah.
And don't even think about mustard
in
there.
Oh, my God. You trying to kill music? You trying to destroy the record industry?
Yeah.
Well, let's get to... I want to get to some of the music real quick because I want to make sure we have some time for that. You've worked on a lot of cool records on a lot of cool artists. And what do you want us to play first?
Why don't we play... Let's play this with the Rolling Stones. Let's play Rainfall Down.
Rainfall Down.
All right, here it is.
Filthy block of flats, trash was on the floor, a snake was in my nose, hinges off the doors. She took me in her room, I was big and span, fixed me up a drink, turned down all the lamps. The rain fell down.
cooked me up some eggs. Then she made some tea, kissed me on the cheek, and I turned on her TV. It was all the usual crap, all the usual sleaze. 40,000 quid, some bimbos fill the beans.
Was grooving like crazy.
That is a groove,
dude. And it's just like, I didn't want it to stop, man.
No,
that bass line just had me just
really? The producer is Don Waz, and he's from New York, and he's from Detroit, and he's just got, he has the groove is in his DNA.
Yeah. He just feels,
yeah, he just knows the funk. Exactly.
He's a bass player, right?
Exactly.
That's, yeah.
I mean, he plays a lot of instruments, and he's a songwriter as well, but bass is his kind of main.
That's his bag.
Yeah,
his main. I saw my buddy Dustin was dancing in the waiting room.
You could feel his presence.
Oh, feeling it.
No, I wanted to ask you a couple questions.
Yeah.
First of all, was that recorded to tape, or was it digital? Was it a mix?
Well, yeah, this is interesting. That was the first time that the band recorded digitally and not to analog tape.
Wow.
And a big part of that was because we started recording at Mix Place in France from Fourchette. And they'd done, Exile Main Street was recorded in France at Keith's Place. And I think this was just an extension of that vibe. And we were just doing some demos there. And I set up a kind of, not rudimentary, a pretty cool recording setup, but not that huge. And
right.
It was nothing like being in a large studio. We had all the right tools, but not too many of them. And it was just myself and Pierre de Beauport kind of handling all of the logistics and everything. And so we set up, and we just got this cool sound. Charlie Watts was in, that was all, we were set up in this chapel. And Charlie Watts is where the altar was, which is absolutely perfect. I mean, who else should be there in the whole world except that guy. And so that's where his drums were. And then there was a tiny bit of isolation into this main room. And then that's where all the rest of us were there. And that's where we tracked this record. And so we started to just go through ideas there. And I think the idea was to go somewhere else, to a big studio, and record it, quote unquote, correctly.
Right, right.
But it sounded starting so good that, we just said, okay, this is it. This
and that guitar riff was just killing.
Exactly. And that was like, all done in just a regular room with microphones and digital recording. We couldn't have done that with a bunch
of vintage gear too.
Yeah, well,
there's that factor.
Exactly.
But not to them. To them, the gear's just their gear.
They're older than.
It was amazing. One of the things we were talking about when the song was playing off the air was the reverb on mixed vocals. Like, it was a really peculiar and different sound.
Well, that's interesting. Vocals. That was actually, we brought it back to, and I actually went to my alma mater, back to Henson.
Nice.
Studios, so to mix it there. And that track, it's got, I think the reverb is an old plate that they have there.
The old school, the way they used to do it, yeah.
And I like plate number one and plate number nine over there. And then...
giving away all your secrets. I don't remember that.
There's no secrets. I can't, you know, it's really hard to copy anything from anybody.
Right.
It's like kind of slight change of how you use something, it's going to sound totally different. But and then there's also a live chamber. And live chamber is where they have a room that has a lot of tile on it or concrete, and they put a speaker in there, and then you pump whatever you want in the speaker, and they have a microphone.
Right.
And then it gives it this sparkly kind of big sound. It sounds like you're in that room.
It sounded like he was in a hall. Yeah. It was like, so that, it was so bitching.
They have one, a special one there called the White Room.
Why didn't they push that? Did they push it as a single, or was it just
that
like,
one was not pushed as a single?
Oh man, and they should have.
So that's kind of why I wanted to play it, because it was super popular on iTunes, but it didn't. You know,
it's like one of the funkiest songs.
Sleeper track.
Oh man, it's so. You know,
so I'm glad we're getting it out here.
Yeah,
but
man,
it was great. And so we did take the material eventually, and then go into a big studio, and mix it and kind of. Put it together that way.
Do they prefer, or do you prefer digital versus analog? Is there kind of a preference? Is there an ease with either?
You know, I prefer whatever's better for the artist. When digital came out, it kind of became, I think, like in 96, 97, you could buy a Pro Tools rig, quote unquote, that you could use, and it was something. And I got one of those right when it came out, because you could take a song and start writing and start producing, and then you can save that song and you come back to it, and it's exactly the same thing. So did it sound great? Kind of, but not really. You'd eventually want to mix it on an analog desk.
Yeah.
But during the songwriting and song construction recording process, you can move quickly, so the artist is never bored. Because that's the thing that, you know, all this analog tape and all this gear is great.
Rewind the tape.
Now you got to rewind it. But what if they want to play a song that's 18 minutes long and the tape only, you know.
That's plenty of time for them to take lettuce off their tuna fish sandwich. Use their time wisely.
So digital technology is artist friendly, and that's what I like about it.
Yeah, no, and it saves time. There are things about it. For me, I love the sound of analog.
Yeah, like, I mean, I do too.
Man, it's just I do too. Nothing
but
like
analog tape was a pain. You know, you just got to do the edits with the razor blade, and the analog tape has a sound, but it's half the time you were battling
it's a pain
that
in the
sound.
Ass. Yeah,
it wasn't true. Like, because when there was no such thing as digital, you're just like, wait a minute, it sounded good. Now I'm playing it back; it sounds saturated, and crappy.
Right.
So,
and then what, like things I've learned, like the quality of the tape matters.
Oh yeah.
Like if it's used tape,
you
know,
you
it's new
different
tape.
Different brands of tape for different types of songs. It got that deep.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Bernie Grumman once told me that for the Bodyguard soundtrack, the producer came in with 163 mixes of her big, you know, her big single. And you know what mix they used? The third one. But that had to been like crazy amounts of tape. I mean, that's like truckloads, you know? So
it's, you can fit about three on a reel, so it's
I mixed two, I think, of my records to Scotch 250, which is a really rare tape that you can't even find anymore. Which is really, really crazy. So I have a little sore, so I'll have to get you some tape.
Like, we can go and we'll drive to the parking lot and meet him. Like, hey man,
did you grow up in Los Angeles? I never asked you that. Okay, oh, so you went to high
born
school
and
here?
Raised.
Oh,
I
wow.
was born and raised in Palos Verdes, born in Redondo Beach.
Okay,
went to UCLA, now I live in Manhattan.
I went to USC. I won't hold that against you.
You know,
fight. You guys need to fight.
Exactly.
Fight.
Wrestle.
Yeah.
To the death.
So real quick, let's play something else because I want to get to the music too, and then I want to talk to you about this tech company that you got.
Yeah, great.
What do you want to play next?
Why don't we play Burn by Hamish Anderson?
Burn. Here we go.
You want to tell real quick? Do you want to just set it up a little
bit?
Yeah,
he's a really cool cat. He's from Australia, and it's one of those where through a friend of a friend of a...
Close.
I heard about this artist, and like, hey, maybe you want to listen to this artist. I'm like, I listen to a lot of them, and he was great. So we met, and now he's out here. He's been touring. He's Gary Clark Jr. really likes him. He's kind
That's
of a
awesome.
Blues guitarist, but he's an old soul.
I just opened up for Gary Clark Jr. in June.
Kill awesome.
It. That guy inspired me to get an ES-335. I just bought it like a month or two ago because of that. But anyways, let's hear it.
Let's stop talking about Nikhil.
I just want to tell him Gary Clark Jr. I love Gary Clark Jr.
All right, here we go. Ready? Burn. Here it goes.
Mm-hmm. secrets like I've never done before. You went into a part so mean that I'm just now starting to miss. Every time I hear your name, it just takes so much to resist. Haven't pushed much too far. You're free now to do whatever it was you wanted to. It bothers me that you don't care. It bothers me to look at you. It bothers me now you're just not there. Now if I ever saw you, wonder what it is that I might do. After all that we've been through together and all the things that I've seen you do. You can say what you want to say. You know I know the truth about you anyway. It bothers me that you don't care. It bothers me to look at you. It bothers me that you don't care. It bothers me to look at you. It bothers me that you don't care. It bothers me to look at you. It bothers me now you're just not there.
I'm going to give him a huge compliment, and it's going to make some people angry, but that's the way I want the Black Keys to sound. That is rock and roll. That, to me, is the shit. His guitar tones, the sound, right. Everything is just badass.
It's you know what's interesting about that, this whole EP that we did was, I love music when it's kind of been put together, but this is, we did it old school. There's right. not even a click track.
Wow, you know, really?
We just put some live takes together, did some overdubs, but kept it in a really organic process.
Wow.
And I think that kind of comes through. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, it
and there's a lot of air. There's a lot of air in the recording. You can hear, like, the room, the sounds.
And those are the things, like, people talk about analog tape, this tape, that tape, but it's the record-making approach
right.
that I think is what gets different. Like, I was down in New Zealand recording a band called Autozam. And I set the whole band up live. We did takes and we did fixes. And, you know, then I got interviewed by MTV down there. And they're like, we heard you have this radical new approach to recording music by setting up the whole band. And I'm just thinking to myself, radical new approach? I mean, how else would you know what you're doing? If, like, you just record one thing at a time. It just
now, let me ask you a question. Do you ever record people, like, the same way? Or do you use different... You know, like sometimes you may experiment with different mic placement or whatever.
Always kind of different. Now,
it's a good answer.
But you might also do. Yeah, everything is dependent on what the artist, what their needs
are. And the room, too, and the sound.
The room,
all those things.
Like we talked about the artist being like, if you have an artist that you know that they feel a little trepidatious, you want to make the process very smooth. And if spending a half an hour on making the guitar sound 2% better, you're not going to do that because
right.
you don't want to take that artist out of their zone.
Right.
You know, but if it's an artist that's into it, sure, then you push it.
And was he playing all the rhythm stuff and the lead stuff too?
He played the rhythm stuff and that lead
it's
live. We did some overdubs for him, but not much.
Dude, it's
not much.
Awesome.
But we did, like, that's the lead is from a different take than, say, the first verse for the whole band. So he's chopped
it was awesome.
The whole band
and I love that it's like part of the legacy of what you do. You know what I mean? It's like you're working with the Rolling Stones. You're doing a blues artist. You said he's from Australia?
Yeah.
Dude, you don't hear that accent. Did you hear his accent?
No, not at all.
I was waiting for a g'day, mate.
Yeah.
There
no.
somewhere.
He's
they're not all Crocodile Dundee.
I know. Yeah. I know. I'm just kidding. Now, he's
and
a badass.
He's got an Australian accent. We just speak regularly. Like,
but you don't hear it in his vocals.
No,
sometimes you can
all.
Hear the accents.
Yeah.
You know? It's like I can hear it in some singers, but you definitely don't hear it in him. And man, how did he get into blues down there? You know
he. This is one thing that's amazing about people that come from outside the United States, especially, is that they don't. The music has no cultural stigma to it. They just listen to whatever they want to. And he just listened. He was into Crosby, Stills, and Nash. He was into blues. He was into this. He was just into. He just went back and found the old masters, you know, and that's pretty interesting.
Old school meets new school. I
and
like that.
That happens a lot with artists that aren't from the United States.
So let's talk about this tech company that you're
I'd
a part
to.
Of. So tell us about it. I don't know anything about it, so pretend I'm just new to the industry. Yes.
I will paint the picture to you, but the Grammys did a good job of helping paint the picture last night because I believe his name Neil
Portnow.
He gave a little speech and talked about where music's at, streaming. And music is this awesome, living, breathing, piece of our culture. But the problem is with the advent of the digital age, everyone is consuming music in a different way. And it started out, that they were consuming it for free. And a lot of people still are now, but now it's on Spotify. And the value of this recorded music is gone.
Right.
Fine. Problem is that the whole business was built around this recorded music having value. And
that's what people kind of walk away with too.
Yes. Yeah. And it's also where you make your highest art.
Right.
And live music is supported by record sales. Everyone thinks, oh, they're gonna go on tour and they make money. Well, that's really not the case unless you're a pretty large act.
Right.
And so
even when you're a huge act like U2, when they did their huge big tour, they didn't recoup their touring expenses until like a third of the way into the tour.
Right.
So even on the big tours, it's
right.
Like that,
and what? If, and then what if they stopped selling out or anything? Then it would be very easy that they couldn't recoup at all. I mean, U2, they're amazing, but it's very difficult. And so artists these days, they're having a hard time making a living being artists. And
I know the feeling.
There's a lot of really, really good artists out there. And what used to happen in the music business is you had like your major artists, and then record labels would give a thing called a demo deal to a lot of different artists. And that would be like, we'll give you $10,000, we'll give you $15,000, go make a demo so we can check it out. We'll sign you to our subsidiary label that's small. You won't get a big deal, but you're kind
or
of
development.
You get
development
your development
deals.
And
yeah.
you get resources and you get some money. Now artists, I get a lot of artists are self-funded. And, that's really tough because they've got to pay for recording their music. They've got to pay for touring.
The musicians.
And they got to pay for the musicians. And then there's just no way to recoup.
It's like
that
with everything now.
It is. And
any sort of arts, you got to, you make it, bring it to us, and maybe we'll buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like the distribution is everywhere, but it's just like creating it. There's so many obstacles.
Whether it's TV shows or movies or music, it's like, you guys go make it, bring it to us, and we'll see if we'll distribute.
And then we'll pay you maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really sad for me.
They want all reward, no risk.
Yeah. And I mean, you must find it, performing comedy too. I mean, that's it's been very tough. Anyway, so it's very
tough.
It's
hitting all the arts.
Yeah. It hits all the arts. And so for me, I had this idea many years ago, 6 or 7, but just in the past year, it's come to fruition because now it's the right time. But right now, brands are having a tough time reaching their audiences as well. And that's created a really cool opportunity for us to get some money back into the music business.
That's amazing.
Especially. And so what we're doing is we're taking sponsors and we're uniting large groups of artists and their fans, and then we're allowing sponsors to help support and feed those artists. But that's exactly it.
Right.
We need to start getting resources to artists, not just You know, oh, well, it's also we're like cross market. Whatever. They need $5,000 to do their demo.
And that's important. It's part of the culture. It's like it's people take it for granted. They're like, ah, whatever.
We need to give a voice to those people. Well,
it's even like things like, you know, the NFL doesn't pay the halftime act. Like, right. That's a whole nother demon. But it's just like the guys, the music, you know, people don't realize how important it is. You know,
it is.
Even when people get married, it's like nobody remembers what you served at your wedding, but I can guarantee people remember what your song was, or right. The band, or the DJ,
exactly.
Whatever it is. So people don't realize like how important it is.
With everybody running around with earbuds in constantly,
yeah,
it cannot be that we can't pay artists.
Yeah, I agree.
Bottom line.
Music's more alive than it's ever been,
yeah,
but it's also starving the artists that create this music.
The precedent's been set for people not to take the risk and for the artist to fund everything.
But sponsors are happy to shoulder that burden, especially right now. We were talking earlier off mic about I did a reality TV show for Ford called Give Me the Gig. It was a battle of the bands. 12 bands came. Don was a host. I was a host. And we were both judges. And Ford put a reasonable amount of resources into this. The bands got free recordings. The bands loved it. In fact, the bands were so hyped up about it when they would do their exit interviews. You had to tell them, like, look, you can't be this enthusiastic or think it's canned.
Right.
You know, they were that excited about it, and everyone won.
That's funny.
And so, you know, we're just going to replicate that on a larger level and get resources and cash to musicians.
And are sponsors already aligned, or are you looking for more sponsors?
Well, we're always looking. And the platform, we're in the software development stage, and I think we're going to be up in a couple of weeks to a month. And we have a lot of artists and a lot of sponsors waiting in the wings. And then kind of as we integrate, then we'll
get going. That's amazing. I mean,
it's going to be awesome.
You're solving problems for a lot of artists.
I hope so. And
changing the model.
And there's a lot of people, you know, you have a great board, you know, great angel investor, a lot of people that are very into the idea.
Yeah. Well, like brands, it's so important to be hip or to be current or to be on the, you know, the edge of what's going on today and tomorrow, you know. So to see that you're kind of bridging the gap between art and commerce,
right?
You know, it's pretty exciting.
And allow a brand to do something cool. Like, okay, paying for this artist demo, that's a cool thing. And just allow the artist to say, this is who paid for our demo. We're very appreciative.
How can people find more information about this company?
It's bigmusic.com.
So spell it out, because people are dumb.
You know what? And I'm dumb, too, because it's BYGMUSIC.
Ah, see? Throw a little curveball.
BYG.
BYG. Why the Y?
I thought everyone would be reading my name. You know, I think the Y was just cool, and it's just a new way of kind of saying big.
I like it.
And big is what we want to bring music back to.
That's awesome.
Except for people that know how to spell properly.
People are going to be like, but why the why?
I just want my
why the why? Exactly for this reason, so we can talk about it.
And one more time, where can people find you if they want to ask you to record the record or produce the record?
I'm on Facebook, and I'm also on Big Music.
Oh, perfect. Let's play one more track. Dude, Chris, you've been an amazing guest.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I could sit here and talk 3 hours just about your days at A&M. But man, dude, what a story you have. And like the fact that you know, the coolest thing about what you're doing is like you have done what few musicians ever get the chance to do, to work with the people that you're working with and produce the people that you're working with. And you're kind of pooling all this talent together, but you're also paying it forward by giving back and helping the industry move forward and believe in what it's about, you know, music. So on behalf of all musicians, thank you, because, man, we all need it, man. We all need it. Mm. Well, let's play one more track. What are you going to play us out?
Why don't we play Perry Farrell's Song Yet to Be Sung?
This is nice. I like this.
Then we'll see if we can get Dustin in here for a few minutes.
I'm not afraid to die.
so killing.
Stiff stuff.
Hypnotic. Man, that was taking me places, man. Dude, that was like back-to-back-to-back awesomeness with the music and the interview. Chris, you got to come back. You got to come back.
Anytime.
You got to keep us posted on what's going on with the tech company. Keep us posted on more stories of, you know, traveling the world and recording the big guys and the small guys and the guys in between and the girls in between, all that good stuff. On behalf of Eddie Pence and myself.
Oh, shoot. We didn't get us there.
We'll have to get them next. Oh, our studio. Oh, they're pissed.
Sorry. We ran out of time. Dustin, I apologize.
You got Matt Damon.
You got Matt Damon.
We'll see you here next week.
Bye.
Listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.